So for me personally, the space in which something is delivered can have a huge influence on everything from the initial engagement and what a student expects from that, right through to the quality of thinking and the experience and how that affects the memory of that experience, you know, much later. So mm-hmm. it might be that, you know, the client, student, remembers it being a very innovative or a very powerful experience, and they might not remember the details of it, but it's certainly about the experience that they remember, and then they'll start to dig deeper. What did it mean for me? What did I actually learn? Why did I learn that?
Yeah.
So I've always been very curious, certainly like Mike Neary's work and students' producers and that kind of thing. I've had a long-standing interest in that. And I think what we suffer from, apart from his lack of space to deliver a lot of the things that we'd like to, there's no spaces in the departments that we can use mm-hmm. as, you know, delivery spaces mm-hmm. that are suitable. And there's something very powerful about taking students out of their identity or out mm-hmm. of their usual locations. And I think you learn better. I think that's been scientifically proven, hasn't it? If you change places, you have different neural connections. So I think there's a lot of benefit just from being removed from the usual. Mm-hmm. And then there's that power of learning, mm-hmm. apart from the material itself. And I think it being delivered by different people as well makes a difference. So, you know, we can give them the same message, can't we? But they'll hear it differently if an academic says exactly the same words and does exactly the same activities, or if a student delivers it in exactly the same way. So you have three very different experiences, but it can be identical material.
Sure, And do you think there's, I mean, you observed real-world chemistry, and I think the idea behind that was that you could take actually the substance of chemistry and do something with that, which then linked into careers and skills issues in terms of interview presentation or, mm-hmm. you know, public demeanor and all that. Do you think that that's a kind of feasible structure, or do you think that's an interesting structure to do that, or do you think that pragmatically it's better to separate things like presentation skills from academic substance? I mean, I know it's difficult for you to kind of evaluate.
I think it may depend very much on the preference of the learner.
Yeah.
Because if the learner is somebody who, presumably this group were, engaged with their subject discipline and see the relevance directly with their subject and how it links to that, mm-hmm. for some student that's going to be more of a buy-in, I would have thought, in terms of thinking this is actually practicing what I might really do at some stage with my discipline and how I move it forward.
Yeah.
What we've not been privy to, I suppose, is I know it's the kind of the aftercare bit, whereas where you've got the three separate things in different places mm-hmm. and the different approaches, which I think is really interesting. So mm-hmm. you've not got three things all the same in the same space, but different approaches mm-hmm. to those.
Yeah.
The reflective learning bit for me is the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I was coming from in terms of following it up with a strengths profile to give mm-hmm. students the opportunity, having had thought about what they'd learned overall at the wash-up session, to then think about what does that mean for me, and what can I take away about the particular strengths I might have actually been using during that process, and how might I build on those either through the discipline or through other experiences. So the kind of, not only the orchestration of the three sessions, but the kind of the so what factor, where does it go next, and how do you integrate and embed that learning for the student in addition to having interesting places to do the learning in.
Yeah, I mean, I was certainly keen about what the wraparound, if you like, but I was also particularly interested in, you know, the student is at this point right now, and they can look back from that point at the narrative of, you know, why did I choose to be a chemist, and what does it mean, and what do I need to do up to this point. And then that's the bit going forward that we can really help with in helping them make sense of that, starting to think about which areas, which specialisms even, that they might want to focus on if they were thinking of further study, or what kind of job, or it's the taking forward. So that could be a real milestone point in second year, to then decide, okay, well, it's this part of work experience I need to find to explore these career ideas, or I need to really test out some things in, say, a research or academic environment to inform my decisions for next year, or really for end of second year for a lot of what they need to do. And I think that's a particularly good point to engage them, because they've done enough chemistry to know, you know, what it's about, and like you say, they're the ones engaged with their subject. I mean, you've also got the other 50% who don't want anything to do with chemistry when they graduate.
Sure.
So I think that's interesting on that self-selection within the group.
Yeah.
I think the title's interesting in real world chemistry, because a lot of what the chemistry department does here is very much real world, but it's in an academic setting.
Yeah.
So I was curious to that sort of title and whether that drew them in and whether that focuses them on what I'm learning here. I need to make that connection with real world, whether that's real world funding for a PhD and working with industry, or whether it's what am I going to do step beyond.
Yeah, I mean, I think the tenor of the final session was very much, you know, this is, you have to present, you know, so they've gone away, they've researched the topic thoroughly, and they really did. I was very impressed by how thorough their research was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were chemistry problems,
mm-hmm.
and then they presented them without aid of any PowerPoint or anything. Like, the PowerPoint broke on the morning of the session.
Yeah, I heard. Yeah.
But I think actually this was a good thing. So what it did was it created a real sense of pressure, and they I think they all excelled. And the questions were all very commercial. Some were very commercial questions. Some were very commonsensical, non-expert questions.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that you get, you don't just communicate to specialists, because obviously Peter was on the panel, Peter Sadler, who's a chemistry specialist. So it was the sense of having that almost different audiences at the same time, and how do you communicate with four different people with four different interest groups? But combining that kind of presentation skill with real chemistry as well, you know, the sense that there was academic content, because they are second years, and I suppose they have another year. And the feedback we got from the students was that it related to their courses and their exams and some of the other assessed parts of their of their course. So it has a double function.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's fantastic that it is linked with their subject, and I think they start to make the connections between what they need to do in terms of being a good chemistry student and get a good degree.
Yeah.
But I think we might still need a few more tweaks to really help them make those neural connections between my steps beyond Warwick.
Sure.
I think not all of them are at that stage of wanting to think about that or choosing to think about that. And it could just be a few little tweaks. It might be like when you're doing the strengths profiles that they start to make those connections. And I think there would be great leverage there in just helping them either articulate what they've really learned from it. And they might do that differently with us as impartial careers practitioners than they would whether it's assessed or whether it's somebody like Peter Sadler in the department.
So I mean, is that in terms of we actually had a fourth session. It was a feedback session. We had video of their performances, and we talked in a group about that.
Mm.
Would that be a place where you would think there needs to be some more?
I think that's quite hard in a group situation to.
So you think it's
Actually say, well, this is what was really going on. I was actually struggling with this aspect.
Yeah.
I might not have shown that, but what I'm personally concerned about is this. And it might be that they're starting to think maybe industry's not for me, or maybe academia's not for me, or whatever it is. But they don't always know how to express that, or how to take it to the next stage of investigating or testing it out.
But do you think there is an organic link to career?
Very much,
almost session five. Then I mean, in a notional session five being.
But I think session five is when they choose to engage.
I mean, that is the challenge, because some will think that's not for me right now, and even if it would be valuable, they wouldn't necessarily get. That was right for them at that stage. Even if we might think, once you've learned, as you'll remember from the reflective stuff of bringing your skills to the fore, being able to articulate them and think about them in relation to what happens next, they won't all want to. So with strengths, I had five people get in touch with me and say, yes, I'd like to do a profile. Two I've seen and done the feedback with. Three haven't yet completed the profile, and the rest didn't bother responding. So you've got that kind of mixture, and that was a one-to-one opportunity.
But if it was more integrated into a program or something, where like this was, then this was the final.
I think that there would be potential, Marley, depending on how you manage the session, with academic endorsement and buy-in to make that happen. If it was a group thing, that would
between
ensure a better that would ensure a greater attendance, or you kind of leave it the other way where you say this going forward, this is how this could be, these things may be helpful to you.
And I think it's that point of awareness where they then know, you know, the whole suite of what we can offer and the support they have in the department as well as centrally what we offer, and just helping them make that connection and almost putting notes in their diaries to map out what they need to do either over the summer, ready to make decisions early in autumn term, which is an incredibly busy term. And I wonder how much of the low take-up of strengths was the timing, because they were really hammered with assignments straight after that real world chemistry event, and they were really up against all the lab reports, because I noticed the department clinics weren't booked. I cancelled them.
That's probably why the timing may not have worked terribly well then in that case.
I think it was the right timing in terms of their position in second year, but I don't think we could really do much more.
Originally we intended to do it with third years, but because it didn't happen until second term, we thought, well, third year is going to be too busy. And it's too late for any meaningful intervention. Yeah. Well, so maybe second year, you think, is probably better anyway, penultimate year.
I think so, although they'll have already made decisions about intercalated years, and I mean, in some ways, you want it in the first year.
Because then
they can start to
end
really
the first year, because then they could be thinking about, is that going to make me think any more seriously about the intercalated year, or if it's not, what else might I do? Because there could be vacation placements or non-related work experience if they decide chemistry is really not going to be doing it for them, with plenty of time to explore that.
Or they get that this is the part of chemistry which I really enjoy, and I'm not going to worry so much about knowing everything. How can I strengthen that interest, and how can I use my natural talents within that area
to really harness what
and
I
start
enjoy,
exploring and
maximise that, and throw my energy and motivation into those things, and hopefully producing a better degree result and more enjoyment of the course. Yeah.
And I think then they've got space to explore, maybe through work volunteers, to get different skill sets. That they don't get the chance to develop in the chemistry degree, or where, I mean, I find with some of the second years, they've come to this realisation that they don't want to do just chemistry, but it's too late for them to do chemistry with management or something like that, so they'll join SIFE, Students in Free Enterprise, they'll join other things to try and plug that gap, and to try and demonstrate on their CV that they're not just a chemist, they also can do these other things. It's often the decision point about teaching as well. So if you get them too late into the second year, they can't do the SAS scheme because they haven't got time, you know, the student associate scheme things. And I think second year is a crucial time for exploration. And if you've missed that, then it's almost too late by the time you get to third year, because you haven't got space to explore.
I don't know if there's mileage in it taking place any earlier in the second year than it did then, or not.
Yeah, well, possibly in future. It was just that it was an idea that
it came up
organically
and then,
arrived. At the end of the first term, so it was something that wasn't going to happen until this year.
Be interesting going forward as well, in terms of, like, say, maybe what Paul Taylor and other people in chemistry are thinking of changing innovative practice within their curriculum through the years. Because I think a lot of, you know, what you may find from this will be getting integrated into the new curriculum anyway.
That's our hope, that this kind of approach is...
I don't know if you know that Sue Bennett has actually put in a bid to build on the real world chemistry as a notion that could be used across all STEM subjects.
Yeah, well, I was going to suggest, that was my next question.
Yeah,
like, do you think this could be?
Yeah, it is potentially a good model.
And actually that's already happening in, I think it was it John Moores? I was speaking to one of the other STEM coordinators for the Northwest region, and they do this, they do exactly this as part of their courses. And they've got a lot of the STEM funding that's expanding it into courses that wouldn't usually have placement learning. So it's a well researched and well validated model. And I think we've only just sought to catch up. It's just the disconnect at Warwick, isn't it, where you've got so many great ideas and things happening, and you've got people developing them all in different places. And I think that's where Student Freeze are really good, is we can help those connections. And certainly now that we're in departments more, as a true link careers consultant with careers and skills, then we're often able to think, oh, well, do you know such and such is doing this, or this is happening in physics, or that's happening in the business school, how does this all link together?
I mean, I think that's one of the real challenges for the teaching strategy in universities, is integrating all of this, so that's not just an innovative project or an experimental project. I mean, open space learning, I suppose, is experimental in the sense that it isn't something which actually, in the form that it goes on here, doesn't go on anywhere else in England, you know, the same kind of use of drama and pedagogy and that kind of thing within higher education. But at the minute it's sort of sitting there as an experimental thing which is going to finish. So the question is exactly this, you know, whether there's whether if there's an integrated teaching strategy. I mean, it has already been incorporated in the IATL, for in the IATL teaching strategy, for example, and Paul Taylor is involved with that.
Mm.
But it's whether, in which pockets of the university or how awareness would be generated for these kinds of models.
And I think the bottom line is it's a numbers game, Barry, because what you can do with that group of 30 chemists, yes, it's fantastic, but when you've got 120 intake in the year and increasing.
But we do a first year thing with them on the periodic table. In the first week for the last 2 years, the periodic table, we've done every single undergraduate chemistry has done this.
Brilliant.
Where they research an element and then come
back. Oh, that's
right.
Because
they have that as the label for the lab coats, so they never forget which element they've done.
In that context, I mean, you observed a couple of or a session each, is that right? Did you have any impression of the sessions as they were run? Did you suggest?
I was really impressed. I saw the second session, and again, I didn't know what the bit that they'd done previously, but certainly it's the second session. I thought it was very good that they were starting to form more as a group, and they were starting to lose some of the inhibitions and things like that. I think it did challenge them, but again, it was making that link between what they'd experienced and how they'd overcome certain, uncomfortable barriers and things, to men making that connection when you're at a networking event, like the Chemistry and Careers kind of event. Making the connection between how you feel and status and things like that when you're at an interview or where you are in a position of unequal status. I think, obviously, the interactive nature was very good. I thought it was particularly powerful to have Peter involved and to have, like Nick Barker and myself, actually involved and part of it, not just an observer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that gave a very clear signal that we didn't just endorse it, but we were prepared to be vulnerable ourselves and look ridiculous.
That's absolutely crucial in any of those ideas. And one of the things that Peter's very good at is he makes a fool of himself without any compunction,
It doesn't seem to have damaged his reputation in any way, does it?
Oh, it's increased it massively.
It's like, the researchers were like, "He's just wonderful," It's like, spoken of in hushed tones. So,
exactly.
I think one of the comments from one of the students that I saw, she liked the middle bit the best. She thought that was really helpful, and she hadn't thought about the approach to presentations as the kind of the physicality of the non-verbal communication, and actually adopting postures to learn how it feels to be incongruent with how you're presenting yourself and what you're trying to convey, and being aware physically of the inconsistencies, or going into postures which give you a feeling of being that. I think that's really powerful, and I think that's a really good way to consolidate some learning and think that you can consciously adopt physical positions which will actually enhance your confidence, or do things like breathing and so on that will actually help calm you down, and actually being put in a position where you do that to recognise it's real, it's not some management guff, it does actually work.
I think
that's really good.
It was particularly powerful in the group because you could see what it looked like in how other people were modelling it. And it's often one of those things that people assume by, chest out, stand tall, all the rest of it, they assume that's the confidence, but take it too far and it's an arrogance. And it's actually really difficult to convey that in words when you're describing that. But when they can see other people doing that, and one person's portrayal of confidence was very much interpreted as arrogance by one person and authority by another. So that was really, really powerful. And I think, you'd obviously worked your magic in the first session to get them to that point where they were willing to participate. And they're very competitive. From my understanding in chemistry, they do seem to be quite competitive. I suppose they've had to work so hard to get that place in the first place at Warwick. But there was something about, if they're going to do it, they were going to do it really well. Not the personal competition of I'm going to be the best, but as a group, they really did want to kind of launch into it.
For the session I saw, I liked the stripping away of all the technology, and you've only got visual images to work with, and you've got no words to use to convey them either. So you're stripping out everything and making them really think about patterns, imagination, colour, and projection as the vehicles for getting your message across, and that's all you've got, because all they had were visual images of things like dead birds a battery. There are about, I don't know, about 30 coloured laminates of different things that were broadly could be related to chemistry in some way, but it was up to them to tell a story using each of them in the kind of sequence that they designed and agree amongst themselves, and then mime what they'd come up with to convey the story.
Right.
So before they got to the point of actually looking at their presentation skills, they had to really think about, well, how would you do it? Because this is something a general audience needs to understand. Mm-hmm. So how do you do that?
You see, and that's a fantastic parallel with the narrative approach to career decision making, where we get them to look back and how they tell their story.
Yeah.
And how they tell their story can be quite different in how they present it, say, if they're going for a PhD in an academic interview, to how they tell their story if they're going beyond academia and they want to convey who they are and what they have to offer to an industrial industrial interview, or to a different organisation, or it might be into teaching or policymaking or whatever it is they go into. And I think just those little tweaks to help them think, okay, well, this is what we've done in putting this narrative together or presenting this without PowerPoint. And then it's that, it's the add-on, really, isn't it? It's that little tweak to make the connection.
And they step might back from it all as well and see the thing overall and what they gained.
Yeah. And they could do that almost like as a homework type into session assignment. So this is how we've done it for this. How would you tell your story of why you've chosen to be a chemist? And it's just that little extra that can make a difference. Because it's almost like we're walking parallel at the minute. And there just needs to be the little
difference. That's a good point. Yeah, and I mean, I was very impressed by how engaged they were in the first one, and that they acted because they didn't have to. You know, sometimes groups don't and refuse. But this idea of learning to act themselves in interviews, or learning to act that they have to act. You know, that you're still yourself when you're acting. Is kind of one of the secrets of what Johnny does. I think is the sense of, you know, you're not just yourself; you're acting yourself. But it'd be good to get them to reflect on that, and, as you say, reflect at the same time on, you know, how they conceive of their relation to their subject.
I mean, I think it's a huge amount, and we're doing this increasingly now, moving to the technology where they can do mock interviews and be videoed online, and then watch themselves back. There's an enormous amount of learning to be had from watching your own performance.
Well, that's how we ended it. But then I felt that session didn't go so well, because I felt that, well, we had two lead learners there, and we're trying to incorporate, that's the other aspect of this, is we try to get the PhD students involved so that they could maybe take a course similar to this when they're teaching.
That's why they were there.
Well, it's part of it, and then sort of there as researchers thinking about how you different ideas of teaching chemistry. But they were what happened was that people, it's very easy to become critical, I suppose, isn't it, of yourself and of, you know, you can see someone sitting and say, "Well, you're moving too much," or and it's all very external. And of course, the reason all of this is happening is because you're nervous. You know, and the question is, what you need to do is deal with your nerves. There's no point in me saying, "Well, you know, you shouldn't have moved your hand then." Of course, they can see that. Everyone can see that. So you're right. It's a very useful exercise, but it's a difficult exercise to articulate. I don't know
We've done it before where students have to design a 30-second pitch, the elevator kind of speech, and, you know, just pick out, you'd never use it in this way probably, but pick out your unique selling points and think about how you would convey them if you happen to be talking to somebody. And yet in a normal world you might weave them into conversation rather than just speak at someone and say, "Aren't I marvellous, the end, goodbye." But just trying to get them to summarise that and to talk about, and we said to them, you know, you can apply it to a context. If you want to talk about something you've done, if that makes it easier to tease out your skills and what's special about you, you can do that. And then we gave them limited time to prepare, 20 minutes, and then we film them for the 30 seconds and we cut them dead at the 30 seconds. We do it all and then we play them all back and we stop and pause, and they're all very, very kind of can't bear the thought of it, hate doing it, dread it, and afterwards are really relieved they've done it and actually usually do better than they think they've done. And then you get the constructive feedback, because they realise that when they watch themselves, they might have felt nervous, they maybe weren't projecting as many nerves as they thought they were. And there are practical things you can do. So if somebody, a fairly typical one, is girls in particular, their sentences go up at the end and every sentence sort of finishes with like a question mark, and if you know that they're doing it, then you can say, listen to how you're sounding a little unsure. Maybe think about your voice and where it goes up and down in order to carry a bit more authority. And if somebody has got an awkward way of standing, or they really are moving around quite a lot, it's quite evident that they will see that they just need to stand a little bit more.
Yeah.
It's still in order not to distract.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So usually they pick up most of the learning points because they're very hard on themselves, and you actually have
but
to say,
problem,
you did better than you think you did, and most of the rest of the group is supportive and saying, no, you only did that a couple of times, but this was good. So usually you're leaving them intact when they go away, a little bit more confident than when they came in.
Yeah, that's what I find, is that the self-criticism almost became problematic.
too picky. Yeah, good for having a go for starters, and then let's look at what went well, and let's look at what you could build on.
And thinking of the cause, the idea of, you know, you're acting, so don't worry, I mean, it's just about doing it again and again, and you won't be nervous, you'll be fine, because they're all compelling as individuals. It's just making that individual compelling on stage,
And it can be learned, and if it's their first go, of course it's going to be clunky, and then, you know.
But it's making sure that central message is about being authentic, being you.
The best version of you, not somebody else.
And in order to get that through, the physical things of dealing with nerves and understanding presentations as skills are something you can learn. Even if you don't naturally feel that what you want to do. And some people are naturally good at it.
But if you can learn how to play the game and yet still be yourself, it's that kind of marrying up of those things, really, isn't it?
That's brilliant, thank you. That's
Is that enough for what you
need? Yeah, that's good. No, some good ideas there, especially, you know, just about